All right, welcome everyone. Thank you for coming to the session today. My name is Pete McDowell and I'm a consultant with the Microsoft Adoption Services team. And before I joined Microsoft, I was a CIO at St. John Ambulance back in New Zealand. So I've had some real customer-side experience with the challenges of trying to balance those never-ending demands from the organization with having some limited resources. I also know what it's like to try and deliver results that rely on people to change the way that they work. And it's easier said than done. Since I've been at Microsoft, I've worked with about 15 different organizations who were all trying to achieve different business benefits from their introduction of Office 365 or Dynamics CRM. And my work has been focused on helping them to set their project up so that they achieve those benefits. And the session here today is to share some of those experiences with you. So what are you going to get out of the next 75 minutes? Firstly, you're going to get an approach for setting up your project so that you achieve your benefits. I'm going to share some real examples which have actually worked. I'm going to share some pitfalls, so some things that have gone wrong. Hopefully you'll be able to avoid those. And we're going to talk about where you can go for help. Also, I've got some free stuff. So I've got some copies of the ProSci book, ADCAR, A Model for Change. And so that's going to go to people who stay to the end and ask good questions. So please, if there's opportunities to ask questions or provide some feedback, then please take part, because it makes it a whole lot more useful for everyone if it's not a one-way conversation. So before we go any further, I just want to start with some definitions just to make sure that we've got a common understanding. So starting with adoption, it's about deep, habitual use that delivers tangible value. Change management, on the other hand, is about actively guiding the transition from the current state to the future state in a way that delivers lasting change. I want to go a step further and I want to say what change management isn't. Change management isn't just comms and training. So I want you to keep that in mind. And we'll get to that shortly. So here's an overview of the rest of this presentation. I'm going to start by talking about why the people side of change is important. And the fact that you're here, there's a chance that I'm going to be preaching to the converted. But hopefully this section will help you to go back into your organizations and help other people to understand the importance of why the people side of change needs to be worked on. We'll spend some time talking about how you can size up the adoption challenge that you might be taking on. We're going to dig into the things that you need to put in place in order to be successful with your project and get the benefits. And then finally, we're going to talk about where to go for help. So let's start with an example. This is a photo of my wife Phoebe and my son Harrison and I, and we're at the Chinese Friendship Gardens in Sydney. And if you look closely, you might see that Phoebe's wearing some running tights and some running shoes, and it might be safe to assume that she exercises. But appearances are deceiving, and you couldn't be more wrong. So Phoebe's run twice in the last 12 months, and on both occasions it was to get food. So we've been talking lately about how we might build a bit more exercise into our lifestyles and how we might make that change a little bit more sustainable. We got talking about some friends of ours who've been raving on about their Fitbits, right? They've been going on about how amazing they are and how they're in a little group and they compete with each other. And since they got their Fitbit, they do all this extra stuff. So I had a smartwatch and we thought, oh, we'll get Phoebe a Fitbit because that might help her to get engaged. So we talked about how much we wanted to spend, we talked about the features we needed, and we talked about when we wanted to do it by. So basically we'd agreed the time, cost, and quality constraints, right? And we went ahead, we bought the Fitbit, she set it up, she downloaded the app, stuck it on her phone, she synced it up, and guess what? She actually went and found some opportunities where she could do a little bit more walking to get her step count up. 1 month later, though, that Fitbit was in a drawer It was flat, charging cables missing, and hasn't been used since. So what do you think went wrong? I want you to turn to the person next to you, and if you don't have someone next to you, maybe you can just shuffle over and talk to someone close to you. I just want you to spend 60 seconds just talking about why you think Phoebe stopped using the Fitbit. Go, talk. All right, time's up. Does anyone want to share with the room what they came up with? Anyone got some ideas that they want to share with the room? Yep. So she was missing an objective. Yep.
And, the motivation should come from inside and not rules.
Yeah, cool. So she's lacking some motivation and lacking and. An objective. You went first, so you're the first book winner. Thank you.
I guess before you're buying the product, outlining a few things in terms of features, what you're after from a product, but not building into that thought what would change in your life to actually be able to maximize the use of it afterwards.
Yeah, exactly, right? We just talked about the technology and not what came afterwards. Thank you. Yep. No, not at all. Not at all. Look, yeah, I could talk about how much running I do, which is even less than her. I'm too lazy to even run for my food. It was just funnier if I was talking about someone else, right? Any other ideas? Yeah.
Get obsessed with what you're not actually doing, and rather than focused on how you can change what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So you just get caught up by that. You know, you're not appreciating or all the things you could be doing right. You're just, blocked by these things that are in the way. Is that what you're saying? Yeah? Cool. Well, thanks for the feedback. I mean, it's a good, simple example of something that I hear all the time, right? It's not the technology, it's the people. And I couldn't agree more. Yeah, that Fitbit worked perfectly. It was just the way that, our approach to it and the attitudes that we took. Now, I want you to think about an example in your organization where the technology was deployed successfully, but for whatever reason, people just didn't adopt it. And I want you to keep that example in the back of your mind as we move through the rest of this presentation, and I'd like you to apply the things that we're talking about to that project and that idea that you've got in your head. So the first reason that we think that the people side of change is important is that people change at their own pace and they need to be guided through this. At Microsoft, we've developed our adoption services framework based around ProSci's ADCAR model. ProSci are a global leader in change management research, and they've developed this model, which is basically a sequence of stages that individuals need to move through in order to achieve adoption. It starts with awareness of the change and the reasons for it. And an individual, based on that, then needs to build their own desire to get involved with the change. And that's also known as establishing what's in it for me. With that desire to change established, hopefully they've got enough of motivation to acquire the knowledge that enables the change. And with that knowledge, they can demonstrate their ability and finally, some reinforcement to make sure that it's sustained. So when I stop and think about that Fitbit example, it had nothing to do with the technology. It comes down to the fact that we didn't reinforce the change. Now, I want you to think about every person in your organization moving along this adoption journey. Then I want you to think about, what about the people who are on leave? Or what about the people who didn't get the messages about the benefits? Or what about the people who've just got other things that are more, you know, more important at that point in time? And when you think about that, it's kind of obvious, right, that people are just going to move through this at their own pace. And because of that, someone's going to need to guide and corral them and manage the change. Another reason that the people side of change is important is that people aren't going to just change by themselves. And most of you will have seen this adoption curve before, but for those of you that haven't, it basically breaks down the population in an organization into how they're going to approach change. So other than the couple of categories on the left there, the innovators and the early adopters, the vast majority of people are going to require some strong leadership in order for them to change. So you can see why you wouldn't just leave, you know, an organization to get there on their own. You're going to need to provide that strong leadership and manage it. People side of change is also important if you're interested in delivering some benefits. Most projects are focused on delivering a solution within some sort of time, cost, and quality constraints. And most projects don't even manage to achieve that. If they do, they're considered to be successful. If you're after benefits, though, it's going to take more than just hitting time, cost, and quality. And getting to a successful deployment is just one step towards achieving those benefits. If you think about that Fitbit example, we did hit the time, cost, and quality constraints, and by that definition, it was a success. But the benefits weren't achieved, and on that basis, it wasn't successful at all. If we think about the sort of benefits that people are hoping to achieve through introducing technology projects, they all require some form of people change in order for them to be fully realized. I've been involved in lots of Office 365 projects where the business case was based on things like, you know, reducing storage costs. The problem with that, if you don't focus on the people side of change, people tend to just use the new tools the old way. And if that happens, then they're still using the H&S drive, and then IT can't turn off the storage, and then you don't get your benefits and your business case falls over. So whether it's hard benefits like cost savings or it's soft benefits like improved employee engagement, if people are left to get there on their own, the benefits are going to be significantly reduced. And when an organization starts to understand that the benefits that their whole business case was supposed to deliver, once they understand that those are at risk, then they start to focus on the people side of change and they start to understand the value of it. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Research from ProSci over the last 10 years has consistently found this relationship between an effective change management program and projects that meet or exceed their project objectives. The research tells us that projects with an excellent change management program are 6 times more likely to meet or exceed their project objectives. So if you're from an organization that likes to make their decisions based on research, then this is a pretty compelling argument. One of the less obvious benefits of managing the people side of change is that once you've done it once successfully, you've got a framework that you can refine and reuse for all future projects. And when you think about the benefits flowing on to every other project that you're going to do in the future, it makes that decision to invest in the project that you're going to do now a whole lot easier to make. The final reason, which I'm going to share with you today, is also comes from the research, and that says that if you've got a successful reputation with change initiatives in the past, you're more likely to be successful in the future. And it's similar to the effect that these 100 brands with the strongest reputation have on us as consumers. Their reputations make it more likely that we're going to invest our time and our money in their products and services. And people think about changes within an organization in a similar way. If you've got a reputation for managing the people side of change, and you've got a reputation for doing that well, less people are going to resist and more people are going to support that change. So before I move on, I just want to summarize why it's important to manage the people side of change. We've seen that people don't change by themselves and that they change at their own pace. We know that project teams are usually focused on time, cost, and quality, but we know that we're going to need people change in order to realize the benefits. And finally, we saw that if you do an excellent job of the people side of change management, then you're going to be 6 times more likely to succeed, and you'll be building a framework and a reputation that's going to help you with every future project. So the next thing we're going to talk about is how you size up that adoption challenge. There's a framework that we use for looking at a potential change, and we break it down into these 4 areas. So who are the people that are impacted by the change? What are the drivers behind why this change is being considered? You know, what's the timing? You know, when's this thing going to happen and how fast is it going to happen? And finally, we're going to look at how well that organization is set up for success. So let's start with people. So for each of these areas, there's a whole bunch of factors. And for each factor, there's a scale from less change effort required to more change effort. I've put some indicators of the sorts of scores that you might put at each end of the scale, but you could take this and you could put it in the scale of relevance to your organization so that you can compare one project to another. But for the example that I'm going to walk you through today, it's an Office 365 project, and it's being rolled out to about 900 people. It's a combination of frontline people and office workers who are impacted by this. So we kind of thought about how much of their average day is going to be impacted by this change, and we've worked out that it's going to be about 25%. The good news is that they're really, really supportive. They're on Lotus Notes today, and most of them are pretty excited about getting onto a contemporary collaboration platform. They've got offices in just about every state, and they've got another office in New Zealand, so they're kind of multinational. The good news is, though, that they all speak a common language, and they have a pretty common culture, although within some of the frontline people, there's a bit of a strong union representation, and that slightly skews the way that they respond to change. So those are some of the things we think about when we look at the people side. Think about the drivers. In this example, it's definitely on strategy. So the organization's strategy is called out that they want to drive a culture of innovation and they want to drive a culture of diversity. And they've identified that this Office 365 project is on the critical path to them achieving a whole bunch of stuff aligned to that strategy. The vision for the project is crystal clear. Everyone knows that it's about developing, supporting that organizational strategy and building a more collaborative environment. So the vision for why we're introducing it is really clear. Unfortunately, though, there's a whole bunch of other projects that are dependent on us doing this one and getting it in fast and doing it well. And the other thing is that the CIO is kind of new, so this is the first big project that's going to be visible to the organization, so the stakes are a bit higher. So that means that we're going to need a bit more change effort involved in this. The next thing we think about is timing. So how fast is it going to happen? In this case, it's about a 4-month exercise, which is pretty good. But unfortunately, the transition experience for people is going to be pretty painful. While you've got people on 2 different platforms for 4 months, that makes it pretty awkward for people to collaborate and work with other people. So, and then the other thing is there's heaps of other stuff going on in the organization. They're restructuring, and there's some government changes that are about to impact the organization. So, that's something that we need to keep on our radar. And then finally, looking at the organization, they don't have a change management framework because they've never really invested in the people side of change before. They do have some capability though, because the CIO is aware of this and they've employed a change manager, so that's cool. But unfortunately, it's just one person, right? And they're spread across a whole bunch of projects. So they've got some capability, but they don't have a huge amount of capacity. The good news is that the sponsor is the COO, the Chief Operating Officer, and she's an absolute guru when it comes to sponsorship. She knows exactly what she needs to do. She's done this before in another organization. So that's good news, and we'll need less effort to help to guide her. And fortunately, there's a pretty decent budget, and it's going to stretch to getting some outside help in to plug that capacity issue. And they're going to be able to fund a fairly comprehensive training and communications program. So what does it mean overall? Basically, what you want to do is you want to look at all of those factors and those scores, and you want to average them out. And you can do that one of two ways. You can either eyeball it and estimate that it's roughly just left of middle, which is what I've done in this case. Or if you want to be a bit more scientific about it, you could get that scale and you could break it down from 1 to 5 and work out mathematically what the average is. I guess at the end of the day, it's just an indicator of the team size and the budget. If you're at the less change effort end of the scale, then there's a possibility that you could get away with having a single dedicated resource that's got all the right knowledge and experience for the life of the project. If you're at the other end of the scale, then you might want a dedicated team of people, could be 3 or more people. And if you're somewhere in the middle, then it's probably, in this case, it's probably 1 to 2 people, someone dedicated and maybe 1 or 2 people part-time. In terms of the budget, that's kind of easy because it's the research from ProSci tells us that for an effective change management program, you're generally looking at about 10 to 15% of the total project budget. So that's kind of easy. It doesn't matter where on the scale you are, that's still going to be the same percentage. So this is just a guideline, right? And if you need to produce a detailed budget for your change management program, then you could use this as an input to that exercise. But if you're able to demonstrate that you've done this sort of analysis and thinking behind your ask for change management resources, then it's more likely that you're going to be successful in getting support. So let's take a look back at this section on sizing up the adoption challenge. This is a framework for thinking about how much people change effort is associated with the project that you're about to take on. And it involves thinking about the people who are impacted by the project, the drivers behind why this change has been considered, the timing of when and how fast it's going to happen, and whether the organization is set up for success. The answers to these questions are going to help you think about how large a team you need and what size budget. So before we move on, I'd like you to take a minute to think about your project and which end of the scale you think that you're at. Then I'd like you to turn to the person next to you, share your answer, and just explain why you came up with that. So we'll take 2 minutes, starting now. All right, so can I have a quick show of hands? Hands up if you thought that you were at the more change effort end of the continuum. Yep, okay. And what about if you're at the less change effort end of the continuum? Wow, no one. Okay, and what if, sorry, was there someone? No, no one. What about in the middle somewhere? Really? Okay, interesting. Cool, okay, we'll move on. So next we're going to talk about the things that you need to put in place. In this section, we're going to talk about the what, the why, the how, and the who for setting your project up for adoption success. And this framework helps us to think about how it all fits together. And it also goes to show us that communication and training by themselves aren't enough. We need all these other things in order to be successful. So starting with the who, the most important person in all of this is the sponsor. The number one reason that projects fail is ineffective executive sponsorship. The number one reason. So it's important that we do a couple of things early. First, we want to identify who that sponsor is, and we want to set them up so that they understand their role. One trap that we frequently see organizations fall into is to just appoint a senior person from IT as the sponsor. The problem with that is that the majority of the impact and the potential benefits are normally outside of IT. So it's important that the sponsor leads one of the largest groups of impacted people in the organization, and then they've got some skin in the game around delivering those project benefits. IT sponsors can really struggle to influence the priorities outside of their portfolio, and they certainly can't be held accountable for whether business benefits are achieved or not. Having the right sponsor is the first critical decision in whether or not you're going to be successful. Once you've got the right person, we need to make sure that they understand their role, because often it's not very well explained. So they need to make sure that they are able to successfully position the business reasons for change, that they're senior enough to be able to influence the priority of this project relative to everything else that's going on in the organization. They need to be able to build a network of sponsorship amongst other senior leaders, because sponsorship isn't something that you can just do by yourself. They need to be able to walk the talk and be a role model for the life of the project, not just around the go live. And they need to recognize people who are also leading by example. The other thing to do with a sponsor as early as you possibly can is confirm the why. Why is this initiative important, and how does it align to the organization's strategy? If you can't find the alignment to the organization's strategy, then you're really going to be struggling. Here's an example from an Office 365 project that we're involved in. And it's really critical that you get this agreement around the vision for the project early, because it will make life a whole lot easier, and it's going to inform all the other change management planning that you do. The other key people that you want to start getting together are the change management team, the core change management team. And depending on the size of the adoption challenge that you've assessed in that earlier exercise, as I said, it could be one person, it could be three people, or it could be more than that. Whatever it is, make sure that within that core change management team, you've got a person or a team of people that have got the capabilities in change management, in internal communications, and in learning and development. And now it doesn't matter how amazing that change management team is, they won't have enough time to personally guide every single individual in the organization along their personal change management journey, from awareness through to reinforcement. And that's where the extended change management team comes in. Now, we've already talked about the executive sponsor, and we've already talked about the sponsorship network, so let's focus on the rest. The business reference group is made up of people who are influential representatives from across the organization who can provide some feedback, some input into, and then feedback into your change management plans as you're forming them. The people leaders in the organization, you need every single people leader in the organization because they're critical to driving the change at a local level. And so they're part of the change management team too. They set the tone for how things are done in their team. And without their support, the reach of your change management team is going to be really limited. Change champions are another important group of people because they provide that peer-to-peer influence and a deeper level of capability that's embedded throughout the organization. They can speak to the benefits and they can also show people how. One of the customers that I worked with last year had just appointed a new CEO at the time the Office 365 project was kicking off. And what happened was a whole round after round of restructuring and redundancies just rolled through that organization. And I was absolutely amazed that the project wasn't derailed in the process. And when I reflected back on why it managed to keep on going, it's because they had an extended change management team that looked almost identical to this. And what that meant was you had all these different people providing change leadership from different perspectives. So when you had one part of the organization that was going to be disrupted and destabilized by these organizational changes, you had the other parts of the organization that were pushing on and keeping things moving. So that tells me a couple of things. Not only does this work in difficult circumstances, it's probably even more important when things are really tough. Whoever you decide to include in your extended change management team, you need to make sure that you've got a plan that describes how you're going to recruit these people and how you're going to equip them to play their part. This is just a simple example from a project that had sponsors, champions, and managers that were called out as part of that extended change management team. And it doesn't need to be complicated, but you really need to make sure that you've got a plan in place. The next thing we're going to shift on to from the who is the what. I want to talk about personas. They help you to get a deeper understanding of what's changing and what the impacts are on the people and the work that they do. An effective way for doing this is by using personas and scenarios. And personas are a way of grouping people based on how they work rather than just by the department that they happen to report into. They're really important because they help you to develop change management plans that are more relevant to the way that a person works. Instead of taking a one-size-fits-all approach, you're creating a more tailored experience for people. Now, the personas for an organization are going to vary, but often they'll include these sorts of groups. So the task worker is normally characterized by having a highly structured day. The sort of work that they complete tends to involve some repetitive activities, and they're often working in a fixed location, but not always. The knowledge worker, by comparison, tends to be roles where they're far more collaborative, and they're less structured and have a flexible work style. Operational people tend to be the front line, the people who produce the goods or deliver the services of an organization. They often don't work in an office environment, and they engage with change in a slightly different way. Mobile workers, they could be any sort of worker really, but the thing that defines them is the fact that they're moving around a lot and they don't have a fixed work location. And that's also going to impact the way that they engage with your change management plans and activities. And people leaders, well, I don't need to explain what they do. But if you think about the differences between how a mobile worker and a task worker operate, you can see why it would be important to think about this when you're developing your change management plans. If you think about how you might deliver communications and training, they're going to be vastly different if you're trying to target one person who's always in the same place at a set time every day versus someone who might not ever make it into one of the organization's facilities for weeks or months on end. I want you to take a couple of minutes now and just by yourselves and think about which of these personas would apply to your organization. And if there are any large groups of people within your organization that wouldn't fit into one of these categories, we'll just take 60 seconds to do that. Okay, so look, I just want to share an example of a persona that we developed for a customer that was about to roll out an Office 365 and Dynamics CRM solution. And we'd broken them down into those categories that you just saw earlier, and this is the persona for the task worker. You'll see over here, you might not be able to read this, but you can download this afterwards and dig into it in a bit more detail. But we've called out the types of roles that tend to align to this sort of persona. We've captured what their typical responsibilities are, the challenges that they face, what they're looking for from the solution, and what their work style is. Are they more collaborative or less collaborative? Is that internal or external? Are they mobile workers, or do they tend to be in one fixed space? Do they need their technology in order to be productive, or can they work in an unwired fashion pretty successfully as well? And then we also capture a typical day in the life for those sorts of people, what the current technology landscape looks like for them, and what the ideal future technology looks like. We also get an understanding of what they need in terms of capabilities from the new solution. And we also map which of the scenarios, and we'll talk about them in a second, but which of the scenarios would add the most value to these people. So rather than pushing everything in the new solution to them, we just pick out the core priority scenarios which are going to add the most value to them in this persona group. Scenarios, on the other hand, they focus on the activities that people perform which will be impacted by the new technology. They're really important because they help us to understand what that future looks like and how to measure the benefits and what the behavior changes are that are going to bring the scenario to life. So this is an example of a scenario that was created around improved meetings. So you'll see in the scenario that it captures what are the challenges for the organization today. In this example, people would turn up to meetings unprepared, they'd be really unstructured and unproductive, and at the end of the meeting, people were unclear about what they had to do next, what the actions were, and often, they come to the next meeting and talk about a lot of the same stuff. They described in this scenario exactly where they wanted to get to, what they wanted that future world to look like, and it helped to really bring that to life. The other thing that we did was work out with them a what's in it for me statement for the end users. So something that helped to build some excitement, to get someone interested in learning more about this and participate in the training. We mapped out the end-to-end process, and it's not just about technology, right? It's about, it started with, making the decision, do we really need this meeting? And only having meetings that were really important, where you couldn't make the decision some other way. Right through to sending out papers in advance, the actual meeting itself, and tracking actions afterwards. In this customer, they had a real issue with the way that people left the state of meeting rooms at the end. And if stuff didn't work, they never reported it. And people would just bitch and moan about how crappy the meeting facilities were, but they never really owned their responsibilities to keep things up to standard. So it called out all sorts of things, right? Not just the technology, but some other things as well. And then really importantly, and this is really where the rubber hits the road for all of these projects, is the behavior changes, the stuff that needs to start, the things that people need to stop doing, and the good things that already happen that need to be encouraged and continue. We also call out what the business benefits are and how you're going to measure those. Any additional policies or procedures that need to be updated and created, or things like templates that might be required to help people execute on this scenario. And then lastly, the skills and knowledge that people need in order to be competent and capable to be able to do this. There are a number of ways that you can prioritize the scenarios that are most relevant for your organization, but there's this really useful tool that's on the Microsoft Fast Track site which can help you. It's called the Productivity Library, and it's a really good source of scenarios which you can search by department, by industry, or by product. Underneath each of these scenarios are a whole series of training links which come together to show people how to execute that scenario. When an organization takes the time to individualize the approach by breaking down impacted people into personas and then identifying the scenarios that are going to add the most value for them, they're taking really important steps towards building desire. So let's move on to the how. And the first of all those orange blocks in that framework that we're going to talk about is the communications plan. Communications plan is the one plan that just about always ends up in a project, right? Even if you're focused on people change management or not. However, if adoption is the goal, then there's a few things that are really, really important. Always lead with the why and what the benefits are to the individual and to the organization. Make sure that you're sending the strategic messages from a really senior person in the organization and that you're sending messages about individual impact from a person's immediate supervisor. You want to be enforcing key messages multiple times through multiple channels. And you want to talk about what's changing in terms of those scenarios and not in terms of the technologies. That's really important to get people to understand the benefits. And finally, and it's a bit of an obvious one, most people do this, but setting up a central location for finding out more information about the project. And if you're in an Office 365 project and you're using something like SharePoint or Yammer is a really good way of driving people to a source for more information. And it's also an excellent way of driving adoption of the tools in the process. There are a huge range of ways, a huge range of channels that you can use for reaching people. And we always encourage customers to try and use the things that they know work well in their organization, as well as trying a couple of new things each time. Here's an example of what a high-level comms plan might look like. And a really good test to see if you've got the balance right is to look at the level of activity that's before go live. So that's deployment pretty much down there. So if you look at all the stuff that's in here before go live and all the stuff that's happening afterwards. If your goal is adoption, then you want, you should be seeing the vast majority of activities occurring after go live, and they should be continuing on for weeks, months, or even years after the go live date. If you're looking for templates for emails and posters, then again, go back to that fast track site. It really is the place to go for all that sort of stuff. And on the right, there are a couple of examples of collateral that you can download and easily customize for your organization. It's what it's designed to do. This is an example of how one organization used video to communicate their vision. All the animations that you'll see in this were from an Office 365 promotional video that you've probably seen before, which Microsoft produced. And what this customer did is they took that video, which they're welcome to do, and they inserted some of their own imagery at the beginning of it, and then they recorded their own voiceover over the top of it to make it their own. And we'd encourage you to do the same thing if you want. I'm just going to play that video.
Our customers, the retail industry and the world, are going through a digital revolution. To be a successful 100-year company, we need to take our customers on a digital journey through our web stores and other digital channels. We need you, our team, to join this journey and help us transform the way we work here at The Warehouse Group. That's why we created Digital Workplace, to give you the tools and a way of working to work smarter in a digital world. Digital Workplace uses Office 365 to reduce wasted time trying to find information. It makes it easier and faster for you to connect, communicate, and collaborate with anyone, even our store team members and suppliers. It gives you new and better ways to connect, communicate, and improve what we do, using instant messaging and Yammer social collaboration, so you can more easily share ideas and continuously improve our business. You can even work on documents together with anyone in real time and see who made what changes when. No more emailing multiple versions and losing important changes. You can hold more effective meetings with anyone inside and outside the business using the new note-taking app, Skype-style video conferencing, desktop sharing tools and more, reducing the time spent on meeting admin and travel time. And because it's cloud-based, you'll always get the latest versions of Microsoft Office. You can create, share and edit your files with anyone, anywhere, anytime and on any device you want, including your own tablet and smartphone. you can get your work done from anywhere. Meeting rooms, in store, on buying trips, anywhere. Digital Workplace is changing the way we work to be better for our customers, simpler for our team, and cheaper to operate. This is the start of our digital journey. So go ahead, try it out, and explore what's possible.
Pretty good, right? It cost them less than $2,000, and I've seen another customer who looked at this, went away and did exactly the same thing for their organization, did it in-house, and it didn't cost them anything other than their own time. So it's a really simple but powerful way of communicating some key messages right across your organization. So let's move on to the training plan. So that's the other plan that often makes its way into most projects. And from an adoption perspective, there's a few things that we find make a key difference. Things like including training activities that are practical. Quick reference guides and videos are really important, but there's nothing better than finding opportunities for people to put these skills into practice in a learning environment. Yeah, Microsoft's got lots of great training material, but it's definitely worth noting that it's constantly changing and being updated. So we encourage people to take our material and provide links to it. So build their own site, link to it, but then invest in keeping those links up to date, because as I said, it's constantly changing and you want to make sure that you're always providing people access to the latest material. Thinking about training in two categories really helps people to prioritize. If you think about day one and people getting started and getting over the hump and staying productive for those first few days, then that can help you, really focus the training and keep it quite basic. And then after day one, you start introducing the material that's about building these new ways of work. And so they can start adopting these new behaviors without being overwhelmed. Champions, which we've already mentioned, they're great for peer-to-peer learning, and they really improve the reach of your change management team. I'm mentioning them here, though, because in order for them to be effective, you want to make sure that they've got early access to the training and they've got early access to the tools. Providing training on demand makes it flexible for people, and if you encourage them to complete it just in time, that means that they're far less likely to learn it and then forget it before they need it. A really important one is running face-to-face training for executives and their EAs. It's really important to provide a good user experience for these people because they're super influential. I was once involved in a project where this wasn't done very well, and unfortunately, Office 365 became the excuse for everything that went wrong in the executive team. It was an awful situation, and you don't want to get into it because it's very hard to back that out. So make sure that you focus on key stakeholders. Last but not least, you want to make sure that you don't forget about the service desk. And we need to do that in a way that sets them up in advance so that they're ready to provide a good support experience on day one. This is an example of a training plan where each of the training content items has been mapped out to roles. And another way to do this would be to map them out to the personas that you've identified. By taking the time to think about who would benefit from each individual training item, means that it's going to be a more tailored experience. And that means that people are going to be more likely to stay engaged with it. So definitely recommend, taking this tailored approach rather than a one-size-fits-all and just pushing all the training to everyone. Here are a couple of examples of scenario-based training that's available at support.office.com. You'll find material there is organized either by application, so Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneDrive, or you'll see it organized by scenario. Now, both types of material have their place, but you'll find that the scenario-based training material tends to be more aligned to the way that people work rather than just taking application-by-application approach. The next thing to put in place is the coaching plan. And it's important because it helps to map out your approach for engaging every single people leader in the organization to coach the change into their team. The coaching plan is the only plan that touches all five stages of that ADKAR journey: awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. For that reason, it's particularly important. The plan needs to include things like how you're going to identify and reach every people leader in the organization, because that's easier said than done. It needs to cover off how you're going to train them, and whether there are any existing leadership programs in the organization which you can leverage, or maybe some training content which you could reinforce or reuse. We saw this plan earlier when we talked about the extended change management team, and this example provides a high-level view of some of the key activities that would need to happen to execute that coaching plan. And it starts with talking to HR, because they're the people who are most likely to have a list of all the leaders in the organization. Getting approval to ask all these people for their time. You know, and thinking about who the sender of that message should be is really important, right? They need to be someone who's got the authority to ask people for their time, and they need to have the respect so that people are actually likely to support their ask. The plan also needs to look at things like how that training is going to be delivered. It needs to look at things like what resources we're going to back that training up with. It should include any details of any rewards or recognition that you're going to use to encourage people to get involved and to recognize them once they have. And finally, any mechanisms that you're going to use for tracking the progress, so things like surveys. So you want to include all this stuff in your coaching plan. This is an example of a coaching toolkit that was developed by a customer who took some of our material and they mashed it up with their own leadership development program. And they developed this really simple but effective toolkit that went through things like, so what's the benefits of this project? What's change leadership about? What their individual roles are in that? And it provided some simple exercises and tools for them to complete with their teams. It was a really simple but effective guide, and if you want to get a copy of it, feel free to get in touch with me afterwards and I'll send it to you. Next thing to put in place is the resistance management plan. This plan is all about thinking, who in your organization is likely to resist, why they might resist, and what can be done to help them. It's important because it doesn't matter how effective your change management team is, there's always going to be some resistance. And it's perfectly natural, right? And the focus shouldn't be on fighting it, it should be on helping people through it. And the reasons for resistance, they could be anything. They could be things like, conflicting priorities, or maybe they've got some insecurities about, what this means for their job. Or maybe it was just that they simply, didn't understand what the benefits are. So they've got no motivation for getting involved. The main thing when it comes to resistance is to expect it, anticipate it, prevent it, and then if it happens, respond to it. This example shows the sorts of things that you would include in a resistance management plan. And it calls out what the potential issue might be, what the possible level of impact that it might have, high, medium, or low. It calls out what you're planning to do about it, the stuff that you've done already, and what's coming up next. In this example, there are three things that were called out as potential issues. The first was change fatigue. There was so much other stuff going on in the organization that there was a real concern that this would just be the straw that broke the camel's back. From a technology perspective, they had locations that were rural and remote, and they knew that the network performance wasn't that great. So they were concerned about what would happen when people started using Skype for voice calling and things like that. And then the third example was that employees might not either be able to or unable to make time to participate in training. And so what were we going to do about anticipating that and stopping that being an issue? The other thing that the plan needs to provide is a framework for dealing with resistance when it happens. Now, this is going to vary significantly depending on the culture of your organization, but invariably it covers these sorts of activities. And it starts with understanding what the issue is and just diagnosing what the root cause. The next step is about working with that person to coach them through whatever that issue is. And you can't think that that's going to be a one-off conversation. It's something that you're going to need to sustain over time. If necessary, it's about communicating what the consequences are, and if necessary, implementing those consequences. Chances are, if you get to that stage with someone, then this isn't the only thing that they're going to be struggling with in their role. But a good way of dealing with these people is to pair them up with someone who gets the change, is supportive of it, and can help coach them through the issues that they're having. So that's resistance. The next thing to put in place is the rewards and recognition plan. It's important because it maps out the tactics for incentivizing people to change and rewarding people who have. Every organization that we've worked with has some sort of rewards and recognition framework. It might be monthly awards, it could be gift vouchers that can be awarded under certain circumstances, or many organizations have some sort of financial incentive that's baked into the remuneration structure. It's great to tap into these programs wherever you can for a couple of reasons. One is they tend to be positive things, right? So you want to be encouraging things that are positive within the organization. But as from a project perspective, if you leverage something that's already there, there's a pretty good chance that you'll be able to do that without any cost to your project. And some of the best examples that I've seen are completely free. We were working with one customer where the CEO took 10 minutes out of their week to look through posts on Yammer that were aligned to organizational priorities or demonstrated the organization's values. And they just randomly went through, found these posts, and liked them. Or if they had time, they would comment on them. And the impact that that had on the people who had posted and the people around them was absolutely amazing. And it didn't cost them a cent. Here's a list of tactics which can be used to acknowledge people who support a change initiative. I'm just going to pause there because I want you to take a couple of minutes to read through these and identify two examples which you haven't used in your organization before, but which you think would be worth giving a try. So we'll take 2 minutes for you to do that. Does anyone want to share the ones that stick out for them? There might be a book involved.
I like the lunch with the leader and mentoring the leader.
Yeah, right. So that's a really good one. Again, doesn't cost anything, right? And, just the leader's time. Yeah. Thank you. Yep.
I really like that.
Okay. Have you ever seen it? Have you got an example of how it's worked? Cheers.
Suggested example was we had a couple of photos on and very, very good. Especially when I came to a document.
Okay.
Cool.
So just for people who might not have heard, so the one that was called out was gamification, and there's been some examples of where it's been used to encourage people or educate people about a new system. Yeah, and it's worked well. Excellent. Anyone else? Okay, we'll keep moving. So the final thing to put in place is the adoption measurement plan. Now, it's really important to do this because otherwise we can't track the progress and we can't celebrate the success. So, and it's best that the plan includes both qualitative and quantitative measures, and that there's a couple of measures that will align to each of the key benefits that were called out back in the vision. One of the traps that people fall into is waiting until they're getting some results before they measure something. And we always find that if you start baselining things early, it helps you to work out what's working and what isn't. And that's really important. And also, if you start it from day one, then it just starts building this discipline in that we're going to start measuring and tracking the results. Now, it's not always possible to baseline everything on day one, but you don't have to. It's really good to just get going with what you've got rather than waiting for everything to be perfect. Here's an example of an adoption measurement plan. and it shows the benefits, the owners, what change has been called out, what the measures are, and when that improvement is targeted by. In this case, some of the measures included things like travel costs, included application adoption metrics. There were the number of ideas that were generated was something that they were going to measure. How long it took an idea to go from being an idea to being a real thing. And then one that is just about always called out in Office 365 projects is the engagement survey results. So almost always there's some ambition around improving the culture within an organization, and that tends to be the way that most people track it. So this is an example of, who knows what this is? It's kind of hard to read, but if you've seen it before, you'll recognize. Yeah, so it's the adoption dashboard that's available in the Office 365 admin portal. And it's really good for getting a service-by-service view of how people are using it, right? And for each of these services, you can drill down and get greater level of detail about how people in your organization are adopting the technology. In a month or so, this capability is about to get a whole lot better when the Power BI reporting pack is added. It's due out sometime in this first quarter of this year. So keep an eye out for that in your tenant, because what that will do is that will mash up this stuff with fields from Active Directory. It'll enable you to drill down with so much more granularity that you'll be able to see department by department what the adoption is, or even geography by geography if you're capturing that in AD. So keep an eye out for that. And this is a bonus slide for those of you who are thinking about an Office 365 project. I've added it at the end because the rollout plan isn't normally one of the core change management plans, but with every Office 365 project tends to revolve around this. Chances are your project team, if you're underway now, are already thinking about this if they haven't done it already. And taking a customer-centric approach to the rollout plan is just absolutely critical. And it's just a couple of simple things. The first thing that I strongly recommend is that you give people a complete user experience as early as you possibly can. You know, if you ask the technical people which order things should come out in, they'll think about what the challenges are around migration. There's some workloads that are easy to turn on, and so it's quite tempting to give people that value early. But you've got to think about what that user experience is going to be like. And if you've just got some of the workloads, then it's okay, but that end-to-end scenario gets broken because they can't do some of the key things. So try and give that complete user experience as soon as you possibly can. The other thing is thinking about who you migrate people with. Just about always, it's based on the part of the organization that they report into. And for some people, that's not who they work with on a day-to-day basis. So work out which people it's safe to migrate with the department, and for the people who are collaborators across the organization, work out who they are working with on a day-to-day basis so that you can move those people together. So that wraps up this section on putting things in place. Now I just wanted to come back to this model because it shows how it all fits together. And we talked about the vision for the project and how it aligns to the org strategy, the why. We talked about getting people together to build that extended change management team, or the who. We discussed scenarios and personas, the what. And finally, all the plans which help describe the how. So hopefully you can see now that to be successful in this space, you're going to need a whole lot more than just comms and training. Just before we move on to the last section, I just want to show you a high-level example that's from the Fast Track Adoption Guide. And it's a really good example of how you can pull all of these plans together into a single view. And this is focused on Office 365, but you could apply this framework to, or this high-level guide to any change initiative that you're considering. So we're on the home straight here. Where to go for help? Now, it'd be ideal that you remembered absolutely everything that I've just said to you in the last hour, and that you're going to walk out of here and you're going to go back to your organizations and it's just going to go smoothly for you. Chances are that's a little bit unrealistic. So we're just going to dig in on where to go for help. So when you start to form your team, the first place to look for help is within your organization. You know, some organizations will have a change management office or a CMO, or they'll have people with the right capabilities that you need in the PMO or project management office. We're constantly working with teams that are made up from all across these different parts of the organization. So just make sure that you go looking in all these places, because you could have people who have got this experience from previous roles that are doing something different now, or maybe their role's not called what you might traditionally expect. So do some deep digging and ask around, because your organization is definitely the first place to start. Another place which Office 365 customers should definitely go for help is Fast Track. I think of it in terms of two components. Firstly, it's a source of guides and templates and ideas for how you can build and execute your change management plans. And I've shared a number of those examples today. The content's great and it's constantly being updated. Secondly, it's a collection of remote services to help customers to onboard people to Office 365 and to help them to start their adoption change management planning. For all customers who've got more than 50 users, then you already got this included in your service. So if you're not taking advantage of it, you're not getting the full value out of what you've bought. If customers are looking for on-site assistance, then our adoption services team who can help. So we deliver a range of services on-site that are tailored to your organization, from three-day workshops to get you started, through to full-time engagements of 12 months or more. We can do whatever you need. We work with your team to deliver the benefits that you're after, and we help you to set up, help to set you up to do it yourselves next time. If you aren't sure what sort of help you need, then the adoption scenario workshop, the three-day workshop there, is a great place to start. And if you have a premier support agreement, then it's something that you can just consume through that. If you want to know more about this, you can speak to your account team, or you can follow up with me afterwards. So that wraps up the presentation. We've talked about why the people side of change is important. We've talked about how to size up the adoption challenge ahead of you, the things that you need to put in place for adoption success, and finally, where to go for help. Before I open up for questions for a few minutes, there's just one thing I want to leave you with. If you're in your project, your adoption challenge is to guide each individual person along this change management journey, from awareness to desire to knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. You'll know that you've got there when each person in the organization can say, "We understand why, we've decided to, we know how to, we are able to, and we're going to continue to." If the plans that you put in place are going to achieve that, then you know that you're on the right track. Does anyone have any questions? Yes. Yes, yep.
Do you have any examples of just flamingly obvious things that you can see on projects in progress at the moment that should be red flags to say we're going to have problems in 12 months?
Yeah, I think the first place to start is that rollout plan. You know, a quick assessment of who's getting what when and what the thinking is behind that. If people start talking about, well, it's because of this technology, or it's because of that technology challenge, then you've got a problem. The other thing to call out, and probably the place that should have started, is asking people, why are we doing this? Are we doing this because we're trying to get off a crappy old version of Office, or are we doing this because the guy from Microsoft sold us some cool licenses, or are we doing this because we're trying to achieve some sort of benefit? If it's about the licensing or it's about getting off some burning platform, then you're really missing an opportunity, and there's a chance they haven't looked at the people side of change. Even just digging in on the comms messaging and the training and just asking some questions about how people are approaching that and what the end user perspective is on that. They're just some quick things that you can dig in on. But it's super common, right? So half the work that we do is rescues. So people have introduced technology and they're just not getting the results out of it. And we come back and help them remedy that. Sorry, just while I remember, books. Thank you. Sorry, yep.
Do you find that it's more, a lack of the project management plan or culture at the top, or the combination of the two?
Yeah, culture number one, and then building that change management into the project along with project management approach. Yeah, definitely. But the culture and attitude at the top, either at the top of IT or in the senior parts of the organisation, you'll find that if your organisation doesn't have a great track record around delivering benefits, then that's a really good sign that you're going to struggle with this stuff. Yeah. Cool. Thank you. Yes.
Microsoft has released new products. Our business are more happy with the old technology. And most of the time we need to migrate these new users or bring new technologies, but we see this as an IT upgrade project.
Yeah.
How do you make them to adopt and sponsor the project instead of migration to Office 365 is not just an upgrade from Office
Microsoft? Yeah, often the way that the vehicle that we use for getting people from that it's an upgrade to this is enabling something new is running some short demonstrations of the sorts of things that are possible and then asking them to think about how could you apply these new capabilities or new ways of working to solve problems that you have today. And then often they'll see opportunities to make it more about changing the way that they work and less about just introducing the technology. Did you have one of these already? Yeah, cool. Sorry, it was a couple over here. Yep.
How do you convince the organisation to shift it out from IT to a BAU project?
I think at the end of the project, so how do you shift it?
Right from the very beginning.
Oh, so to get the business involved? Yeah, so I think the first thing is talk about the business case. So generally, especially in a larger organisation, there'll be some business case required to get the funding. And then if you say to the senior person who's taking responsibility for it, are you going to put your name down to all these organizational benefits about improved collaboration, reduced travel, reduced store, all the stuff that gets called out in the business case? Generally, that will start getting a conversation going about, no, actually, I can't do this by myself. At the very least, we need to include some other people to help me. In an ideal situation, you'd hand it over to someone who's the head of operations or head of HR or someone who's got some skin in the game around seeing those benefits realised. That's the first place to start it. When people think that they're at risk around, that's when they start opening things up. Sorry, you're next, I think.
Just wondering, what is the best method of adoption that you can actually use in providing user and user education?
Best method of adoption? So I didn't talk about it today, but we mentioned just-in-time training that people can do at their own pace and whenever they like. I think that's a good approach for most people, and we talked about the providing face-to-face stuff for influential people. The other thing which I didn't really talk about, and it's a bit of a gap, is looking at anyone who's got any particular challenges. So there might be accessibility needs, or it might be people who are just technophobes, or maybe people who only touch technology for a very small part of their role. So there's definitely an opportunity to call out some people who might be higher touch in terms of that assistance required, and you need to provide a more individualized experience for them. But for the vast majority, that self-directed, just-in-time training should work. So I have a couple more. Yep.
If sustainable change is really the goal, a lot of the stuff you talked about there is all project-based, which is start and stop.
Have
any organisations implement a BAU adoption?
Yeah, I have. So you got your book, didn't you? Yep, cool. So we tried to just... There's a truckload of stuff I could talk about this adoption journey, and we tried to focus it on setting the project up for success. But definitely, there's a whole bunch of things around transitioning the responsibility for tracking those benefits, and then the governance over all the changes that come into a platform like Office 365, shifting that into a BAU mode so that you've got not project resources owning that, but people who's, you know, it's part of their day job, they've got some skin in the game around seeing that successful. So yeah, I've seen it work pretty well. We're doing some work at the moment with a shared services provider for government in Victoria who are probably doing the best I've ever seen, and it's the most complicated environment I've ever worked in. So I was kind of surprised that it's been that successful, to be honest. But you know, happy to, if you want to get in touch afterwards, you know, I can share some examples of how that's worked and just point you in the right direction, if not, come and help you with that. I'm just conscious of time. I just need to wrap up with a couple of, you know, housekeeping slides at the end. One of them is, if you want to get some more information, there's a couple of sources there on Channel 9 and at the Virtual Academy. These presentations will be available for download, and I understand they're going to make some of them into recording, so if you want to go back and review any of it, you'll be able to do that there. But please fill in the feedback form. You know, I've taken, you know, you've invested an hour and a quarter of your time into this, and I spent quite a bit of time preparing. So if you've got some ideas on how we can make it better and more effective and more impactful, then please share them, because otherwise I'm just going to do the same thing next time. And last of all, which, to address any remaining questions, more than happy to talk them through now. I'll hang back if anyone wants to ask me anything. But if you want to follow up afterwards, that's how you can get in touch with me. So thank you all very much. Cheers.